All right, guys. Hey, this is Rob. I'm back. I got the pin input properly, so we should be recording and running along.
Cool.
So, good. Yeah, guys. Well, so you guys were jumping on here and having a conversation before I jumped on about salespeople, acquisitions, and dispositions. Give me a rundown. But first, tell me who's on here with me, so I know who we're talking to.
I'm here. Tom's here.
Hey, Tom.
James and Larry Pop.
All right. It was Larry and your name?
Janie.
Okay, yeah, Janie. That's right. Janie, cool. All right.
And Hal Coker.
Hey, Hal.
Hi.
And Olivia.
Olivia.
And
all
Esther.
Right, great.
And Esther.
And Esther. Great. Anybody else with us? Well, cool. Well, good, guys. Well, hey, let's just jump on in. Tell me what you guys were chatting about.
Well, I'm trying to get another salesperson. My salesperson didn't work out. He basically hadn't done anything. He was working in car sales and didn't really realize that his job was going to take on far more hours than he thought. So he hadn't done anything. So I'm looking for another person. And I was just saying I put a job thing in ZipRecruiter, and within 20 minutes I got three people responded so far.
Yep.
It's a free trial thing, so I'm gonna have to run those down. But we're talking to Hal, and Hal's had like crazy good responses with Indeed, and I was just figuring out how, because when I did it Indeed, I got six people, but none of those seemed to work out that well. So.
Well, here's the thing. It depends. It kind of depends on the ad that you run, the timing, you know, when you launch the ad. Like here's the thing about hiring and recruiting, guys. You never turn it off, right? You always have hiring, recruiting, working in the background, so that when somebody does quit or leaves or whatever the case may be, isn't working out, you've always got a little bit of a backlog of potential candidates to dip into. So, just sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't as far as running the ad. But just keep doing it and you'll hit hot streaks and you'll hit cold streaks. But if you build that backlog, you'll be just fine.
Yeah, okay. And it's just like anything, it's another skill set, you know, interviewing the salesperson to try to figure out if they're any good, because so far I haven't had a lot of good luck with them yet. But
you guys want to know the favorite part of an interview that I ever get to have with a salesperson?
Yeah.
Has Mike ever told you my most favorite question in an interview with a salesperson?
Oh.
Does that ring a bell for anybody?
Probably
okay,
has.
Here's what it is. Let me tell you. I love number one. I love getting you can tell the energy of somebody that's a good salesperson. If they're a good salesperson, you're gonna know their energy when they first jump on that first conversation. Guys, listen to me. If they don't have energy, do not waste your time trying to interview them, okay? If they have energy and they get through that first conversation where you think, okay, this guy's got energy, he's motivated, or this gal, and you get to the interview, get into the interview, and about a third of the way or maybe a half of the way through the interview, I stop, I set my pen down on the table. Like, guys, picture this. This is exactly what I do. I stop, I set my pen down on the table, I bring my hands back to my chest, and I just kind of look at them and I say, you know, gosh, Tom, I got to be honest with you, man. Like, I'm looking to bring an absolute total rock star onto the team in the role for acquisitions, and I got to be honest with you, I'm not feeling rockstar. That is my absolute favorite thing to do in an interview. You want to know why? Because how they respond in the next 8 seconds tells me everything I need to know. They either put their tail between their legs and they say, oh, well, okay, maybe, I don't know. Or they say, well, I don't know what conversation you've been a part of, but I am the rock star that you want to bring on your team. They're going to do one of two things, tail between the legs, or they're going to fight for who they are. And if the guy will fight when I just completely crush the opportunity, if the guy will fight, that's the guy I want to hire. You got it'll put a lump in your throat if you've never done it the first time you try it. But if you can pull it off, you'll know if you want to hire him or not.
All right. Here's one of the problems that I have.
Don't sound so enthusiastic about the best interview question ever, people.
Well, part of it for me is I don't have confidence that I can find sellers. That's the, you know, I mean, I don't, you know, I haven't done a deal like this before. So it's like, crap, we get all these, you know, am I going to even be able to sell these, you know?
Yeah, but here's the thing. If you bring the right people on your team
and pull the
puppet strings and orchestrate, they'll do the work.
Yeah,
do it. You don't have to. Tom, you don't have to do the work. You understand what strings to pull in the business. Do that and stop doing the things that you're not good at. Get people to do the things that you're not awesome at or don't want to do or makes you uncomfortable just because you're wired personality wired differently. That's okay because your personality is wired to be the best you. And so that doesn't mean that you have to do all of the roles in the business. Get somebody that's wired to do that thing.
Well, I know, but I mean, I need to find buyers. And I don't know
how
to direct somebody else to find.
You don't need to find buyers. You know exactly how to find buyers. What you need to do is you need to just hire somebody that's good at getting on the phone and talking to people, and you need to do what we've taught you to do. That is, use FreedomSoft Cash Buyers Tool, use the List Source Cash Buyers Tool, skip trace them, get on the phone, call them, go Google search all of the other wholesalers in town, look up their buyers in the public records, hunt down their phone numbers, call them. Like, buyers are a dime a dozen. They're easy. They're everywhere. That's easy. Honestly, it's easy. The easiest job in our company is our dispositions guy. Why? Because we hired a guy that just knows how to chat people up and have fun conversations. And, you know, he's just Mr. Chatty. But he also knows how to close the sale. So he chit-chats all day long with people, and then he closes the sale. So, but that's because he's wired that way.
How much does a disposition person get? What do they get? What percentage do you pay?
Our acquisitions guys get 15% of the commissionable base, and the dispositions guys get 10% of the commissionable base. And so, we pay a base salary of $500 a week on top of that. So you could increase your percentages a little bit if you wanted to, if you didn't want to pay a base, and that's perfectly okay.
You pay the salesperson 15%?
We pay the dispositions guy, the seller guy, sales guy, 10%, and we pay the acquisitions guy 15%.
I see.
And both of them, both roles, and we have multiple. Here's what I found. Three acquisitions guys can usually feed one dispositions guy. So three buyers can feed one seller.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Rob?
Yes, sir.
It's Hal. Let me ask. Okay, so I got a salesman and I'm paying him 20%.
Okay.
You're paying 15, but it's straight commission.
Yep.
Okay. You're paying 15% plus a base, right?
That's right.
But you're a lot bigger than we are. We're tiny. But that's good because for me, I can't afford to pay a base right now. And I'm not
you're
sure
right,
I would anyway.
Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing. You want a sales guy that or gal who wants to work on commission only. Like any salesperson that is there because of the base is not the salesperson that you ultimately want, right?
Yeah.
You want somebody that's there for the commission, 100%.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The only reason we pay the base is because we bring them on as employees. And under Colorado labor law, as an employee, we are required to pay them minimum wage if they don't earn minimum wage in a week, and that's $382. And so we just give our guys a $500 a week base, and frankly, if they're going any kind of a week on end where they're not exceeding their base in commissions, they're going to be short-lived with us anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
And here's why. Here's why they're going to be short-lived, because I know what my KPIs are. And what I mean by that is I know the key performance indicators. I know that if I go generate vacant house leads or inbound leads off of direct mail or inbound leads off of an SMS text message campaign to landlords. If I go generate leads and my guys jump on the phone, my acquisitions guys, if they're making 400 phone calls a week, and that's just manual dials, not a dialer, not any fancy phone system. If they're making 400 dials a week and they're talking to, I'd have to look on our KPIs what the percentage of people that they talk to is. I think our numbers are about 65% good numbers off of those skip trace numbers. So 400 dials, they're probably getting through to about 250 good phone numbers. They're probably talking to 25 to 35 people, like legitimate seller conversations, and we should be buying anywhere from 4 to 8 deals in a week. Those are my expectations. So when
numbers,
I bring a guy, what's that?
I say off of those numbers, you should do 4 to 8.
Off of those numbers, I should do 4 to 8. So 4 is 1% out of 400 leads. I should get at least a 1% success rate to a contract. So that's 4. 8 is a 2% success rate. So I'm going to go about 400 dials, calls, outbound calls to our leads, to about 250 decent good numbers, to about 30 conversations, to 4 to 8 contracts.
Could I ask you something about that?
Yep.
I'm down in Georgia, okay? Got a
yep.
lot of vacant properties. I've been using your vacant properties list. I have a bird dog. I've used both, but I can get a lot more off of the off of the post office list, the vacants.
Yep.
But when we vet them, or when I've got people that, you know, gets phone numbers and stuff, and I use a couple different sites, I'm getting I'm getting a lot of investor names off of it. Probably as much as, I haven't done percentages yet, but I bet you 30 to 40% of the leads are investors that have already bought, which is a good thing in a way, because you can put them in the database and now you got somebody to buy the properties in the area.
Sure.
But we're dialing a lot to get, you know, but I'm not, we're, our numbers aren't going to be no, I don't think our good numbers are 65%. They might be, and I know Mike has talked about this, but I think on, I use U.S. Search and Intelligence, and actually I like U.S. Search the best because it gives the age of the buyer or the age of the seller, and I like that. But I wish the percentages were better, but we just keep dialing more and more. So, but that helps. That helps a lot, just those figures you gave me, because that'll help me look at what we're doing.
Well, here, Hal, this will help you as well. I just pulled up, while we're on the phone, I pulled up my lead acquisitions guy's FreedomSoft campaign. He has 8 contracts out right now that he's waiting for. Let me look at a quick number here. Hold on 1 second. So he's got 5 active leads. He's got 10 contracts out. He's got 16 new leads to follow up on. And he's got 151 that are new research complete. So here's here's the point. With the 10, here's the interesting thing. With the 10 contracts that he has submitted written offers, and he's just waiting for them to reply back, 9 out of the 10 were made to, nope, I'm sorry, 8 out of the 10 were made to investment companies, not to individual owners.
Really? Okay, that brings up a problem, though, with me, is how do you find the phone numbers on the investment, because if it's an LLC, a lot of times that's tough to find a phone number on them even. You can get a mailing address. You can do the research.
Yeah, but so number one, go Google it. And
right.
Google, you know, the LLC plus the city location. Oftentimes you're going to get, you know, some of those search sites are gonna pop up, and then they're gonna show a name along with the LLC, and sometimes the name along with the LLC is either the owner of the LLC or the registered agent, which is often the owner. And so then you go skip trace that person's name.
Okay.
Or a lot of times we just Google search the LLC plus the city. And we'll find phone numbers direct to LLCs, and you know, maybe it's MH Investments, and we Google search it, and all of a sudden this, you know, and we Google search the name, maybe we Google search the mailing address, and all of a sudden we see M&H Industrial Supply. Well, we're looking for M&H Investments, but when we Google search the address, we find this company called M&H Industrial Supply. Huh, I'll bet you the owner of M&H Industrial Supply has got a little investment company over here.
No kidding.
And so we'll call the industrial supply place and say, hey, we're looking for it, and, you know, we just start the conversation.
That's a super idea.
So I mean, the reason I'm pointing this out, guys, is 80% of my lead acquisitions guys' contracts sent right now are contracts sent to investment company LLCs, not individual owners. And let me look here. Here's the other interesting thing that I'm going to tell you. 9 out of those 10 contracts sent came from our bird dog leads. 1 came from our vacant house finder tool in FreedomSoft. Now, I'm not convinced that that's necessarily it's not always going to be that distinctively weighted one way or the other. But I do think it's interesting to note that, you know, we've got 9 here with bird dog leads and 1 with the vacant house tool.
What? And I got to say something about that if I could, too. Rob, I know you're civil engineer by trade? Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Both of my sons live in Denver, and they're both engineers. One's a civil engineer, and he owns his own company with another guy. And I know you guys are different, and so I'm an old man, and I'm, you know, when I heard this to start with, I thought, okay, I know how civil engineers think because I got 2 sons. And so I'm thinking, I don't know if I believe everything Rob says, you know. And so what I'm getting at is, okay, I got a zip code down here where I'm at in the Atlanta area that is just a hot area. So I ran the vacant house list, and I had a gal go first and do quite a few vacant houses. She did 200-300 of them. Then I get the list from the post office, and it's 900 or 1,000.
Yep.
And I've tried to do some comparison. And actually, the house that I bought that I've got under contract right now, she had actually bird dogged that lead. But I actually, when I looked at it, I actually got it off of the other list. So,
cool.
I don't know. I mean, I'm trying it both ways, but one reason I'm going, because I'm new, is that the cheapest way for me, rather than pay the bird dog, because that software doesn't always, I tried it myself. I even bought an iPhone, and it is nice to have a picture of the house in the lead.
Yep.
I like that.
Yep.
But,
yep.
So I don't know. I guess I'm still experimenting is what I'm doing. I believe what
saying. Yeah, here's the thing, Hal. I'm not, and that's why I was caveating that saying. I wasn't saying that 90% of our deals come off of bird dogs versus the vacant house finder tool.
Yeah.
I was just sharing what I was seeing the campaign at this moment in time. We do both, and they're both equally effective. What I think you will find interesting here is I clicked into one of I noticed that one of these in the contract sent said a package deal of 7. So, and I clicked into the deal because it was an LLC named, and the LLC has a local Memphis address. The mailing address is Carlsbad, California, and the notes underneath it say owner found through Google search.
Oh, babe. That's interesting.
Yeah. And the reason I clicked on that one is because it showed me that it was a package deal. So here's one owner that lives in California that we are buying a package deal of 7 houses on. And I'm actually looking in our dispositions notes on this package deal right now. If the contract comes back, which I don't know that it is back yet, assuming the guys just haven't updated their status, we don't have the contract back yet. But I do note in our lead record that all 7 have already been pre-sold to one of our buyers. So all got to do is lock up the contract. And we've got them sold. We've got these 7 houses sold for $100,000 payday.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Well, I just wanted to say one more comment, and then I'll shut up, let somebody else talk. But one reason I'm going with the post office deal is because of the money thing. If I put 1,000, I can get 1,000 leads off the post office for free. I mean, they're part of the FreedomSoft thing. Where if I did the same 1,000 on a bird dog, I'm paying $3 a lead. So that's $3,000. And money wise, right now, it's easier for me to do the post office.
I don't have any problem with it. I have zero problem with that approach at all. None.
Okay.
I think that's perfectly fine. And look, you got a deal under contract that you're flipping, so it's working, right? So you're good.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. It's working. Yep. Okay, thanks.
Hey, Rob, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
How many of those, you know, when you that guy was out of state, I was going to ask that. How many of these companies, when you find the companies, are out-of-state companies as opposed to, you know, in the same market?
Sure. Let me see if I can tell. I'm just going to look at the contracts that we've got here. here's a crazy one. We've got one. The next one that I clicked into is actually out of Singapore. So not even out of state, out of country. Let me keep going here. Let me see. So both of those were out of state. Let me keep going. Here's one that is in state. The third one I clicked on is in state. The next one is in state. So I'm 50-50 right now. And I'm gonna guess that if I went to our properties dashboard and looked at our history, I'm gonna guess that we're probably 60-65% out of state and 35-40% in state.
Wow.
I would guess that we're a little bit more heavily weighted to out of state than in state would be my guess.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. This is really good though, talking to you with all this, all the KPIs and everything else. It really just super good to know the numbers, so like how your business is working and stuff. Just because, you know, it's like, should I be chasing an out of state LLC, and the answer is for sure.
For sure, 100%.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't know before because it was like, you know, I don't know. Does it work? Yeah, it works. Yeah, definitely. Okay, cool. Great.
Yep.
Great.
Awesome.
Hey, Mike.
Awesome.
Hey, Rob.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
You sure can.
It's not about what you just were talking about. If you want to finish up. I'm listening but I haven't. So I
no,
have
you're good. You can take us a completely different direction, and I'll bet I can mentally hang with you.
How about everybody else? No. so my question is, I have a verbal contract for a house in Louisville for $25,000. She will take less than that. Her main concern was that she said, I can't do anything until these liens are taken care of. I said, well, I can work with you anyway. And so the ARV is about $60,000. She wants to sell it for $25,000. I did the comps. That's how I got the $60,000. So it's on the borderline for the flip. I haven't run the buy and hold numbers yet, but I'm sure it'll be good for that. But anyway, with all the liens, I feel like I need to find out how much the liens are, but I don't, do I?
Well, what does she think the liens are? Does she have any estimation?
She has no clue whatsoever. I asked her.
And the $25,000, is she expecting that she's going to put $25,000 in her pocket, or is she expecting that the $25,000 is going to pay off the liens?
She'd be happy either way. She said,
gotcha.
I don't care what I get for it. I said, well, what is the minimum? This is how I get it. I said, what's the minimum you take? She says, well, 25. So she would probably take 2,000. I mean, you know what I'm saying? But I want to make sure I do the research and give that fair offer. Right now, it's 25.
So is it in an area I mean, if you're telling me that the ARV is 60, well, how much work does it need?
It needs about 25 for a flip and 15 for a buy and hold.
Okay, so I can tell you already your math doesn't work. You can't pay $25,000 for a house and put $25,000 into it and then sell it for an ARV of 60. You make no money.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm following you on that. Yeah, it doesn't make sense
yep.
at all. Okay.
It doesn't make sense at all. So so what you've got to do is you've got to run the and here's the other thing. I would be wary of it being a fix and flip with an ARV of $60,000. Do you see fixed up improved houses selling to new homeowners in the area for $60,000?
You know, I ran the comps on FreedomSoft, and then I did a realtor.com search and came up with the same number.
So I wonder if those are retail sold comps, or I wonder what that number actually represents. Do you know what is the
yeah.
what are the rents in the area?
The rents are around 700.
Okay. So have you run the calculation to say what would it be based on rents?
You know, I have not run that yet. I just did that right before I got on the call. So I need to run
okay.
I need to run more numbers. Yeah. And
so,
this is my gut.
So here's what we're gonna
Okay. Go
yeah,
ahead.
So here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna take $700 times 70%, which takes out our 30% operating cost. We get
yes.
$490 a month net rent times 12
uh-huh.
months gives us $5,880 per month. And let's say that you wanted to price this now you're going to sell it to a local landlord and they're going to be really picky and they're going to want to buy it at a 15% ROI.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So a landlord is not going to be all in. Purchase price plus closing cost plus repairs, all in, not more than $39,200.
Uh huh.
Okay. I took the $5,880 a year net rent divided
yeah.
by 0.15. That gave
okay.
me $39,200. Now if I subtract the $15,000 that you say is a rental rehab.
Yes.
That gives me $24,200. If I subtract
mm-hmm.
the $10,000 that you want to put in your pocket, that brings you
yeah.
down to $14,200. And if you look at that and say, well, I didn't account for my buyer's holding costs and closing costs and whatever, I would take that $14,200, and given the fact that this lady's motivated, I would probably make her an offer for $8,800. I'd make her an
okay.
offer for $8,800.
Okay.
And I would put in there that once you're under contract, you can go ahead and submit it to the title company and you can figure out what the liens are.
Okay.
But until you have a contract with her,
right.
You're not in a position to even be able to help her.
Right, exactly. And so how do the liens affect anything now? Let's say I offer her 88 and she takes it. Now what?
Yeah, so let's say that the liens come to $6,000.
Uh-huh.
At closing, you're going to pay $8,800 to the seller, $6,000 of that is going to go to pay off the liens, $2,800 of it is going to go into the seller's pocket.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's say
so
you,
if you
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
go
let's
ahead.
Say let's say that the liens let's say that the liens come to $12,000.
Yeah.
Well, then you have to look at it and say, well, if I increase my purchase price to $12,500, we'll pay off the liens. Mrs. Seller, you'll put $500, give or take, in your pocket at closing, but you'll be done with the headache and the hassle. And now you have to decide, okay, I'm making a little bit less money on this deal, but is it worth my time and energy and effort? Do I have a buyer that will pay, you know, $16,000, $17,000, $18,000 for this? And
yeah.
the answer is probably yes.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
So that's how you look at it.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you very much. That's very helpful.
Yeah, so I would go locked. I mean, look, even if you locked it up at 25, which I would not recommend because you're not going to make any money at 25.
No.
You know, even if you locked it up at 15 or 12,000 or 10,000 or something, you can lock it up and say, "Listen, Mrs. Seller, I have no idea what's going to happen until we're under contract and I can have the title company help us understand the lien situation. Once
yep.
I understand that, we can adjust our paperwork if necessary to make this deal work for both of us." If you're just transparent and tell people exactly what you're trying to accomplish, and you let her know, depending on the liens, it might mean that I can get you cash at closing. It might mean that you get zero, but we pay off all the liens and get the headache and the hassle off your shoulders.
Yeah, she'd take that. She would.
Yeah,
so I would
get your contract put together, get it into her hands, and go.
Okay, will do. Do that tonight. Thank you.
Awesome. Great. Who else? Who else has a question? Well, you guys are all pretty quiet today. Are you always this quiet with Mike?
Well, let me jump in. I'm new to the game. This is the first conference call. This is Larry Potts.
Hey,
and
Larry.
How you doing? Let me throw a for instance on. Went and looked at a house last week with a realtor, rehabber, friend in the business. We assessed the house. It is a stuck in the 70s by all means. The carpet is still a shag into it. But the house neighborhood is becoming upswing on it. We looked at the numbers on it, and the cops were all over the board because of people had rehabbed houses recently, and then there's ones that hadn't rehabbed and sold. So those numbers are really difficult to grasp onto. But the size of the house and everything made us think. We came down to a figure with her, the lady who owns it in a nursing home, and very motivated seller, but she's been advised to turn it over with a realtor. And I have told her that, you know, you don't want to pay $20,000 realty fee. If we can, you know, give you a reasonable offer now, that would net you the same amount of money. I guess my question comes in from a wholesaling standpoint, exactly what margins would I need to show to a person, a prospective wholesale buyer, of what the house could be? Do I need to break it down what it would take me to rehab the house, or?
Yeah, okay. So good question. So let me dissect this in a couple of different ways, Larry. And I think this will help a lot of people. The first thing I would do is, and tell me if I'm setting up your scenario right, you've got a house in a neighborhood where you're seeing a combination of different sold prices. You're seeing distressed properties that are being sold at lower prices. You're seeing livable but not rehab to today's standard houses sold at a mid-tier price, and then you're seeing fully rehabbed modern you know, kind of yuppity houses rehab to the nines, selling at a third higher tier price. Is that what I'm hearing, first of all?
The last two, correct. There's no depressed houses in the neighborhood.
Okay, gotcha. So you've got your houses that are just selling unimproved, and then you've got your higher price tier where somebody's going in, rehabbing them, pushing the value up, and selling it improved. Here's the first thing that I'm going to do. I'm going to decide what is the finished product that I'm going to have. Am I going to be rehabbing the whole thing and selling it, or is my buyer going to rehab the whole thing and sell it at the higher price tier? Because if that's the case, that is my anchor. I'm not even going to worry about the lower unimproved property prices. I'm going to comp it based on the quality of the condition at the end. So my ARV is going to be based on what the property will be, not what it is today. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's step one. Step two is, the next question is, what does it cost to repair? What does it cost me to fix it up? So if I know that my ARV anchor is the top tier pricing, and I can, based on square footage, bedrooms, bathrooms, location, basement, garage, all that kind of stuff, I can figure out my ARV minus the cost of improvements. And what's a total rehab going to cost? That gives me fixed up value minus the cost of repairs, gives me what I like to think about as the as-is value. It's what it's worth today, dollar for dollar, for the rehab. From there, I start to run the math, and I say, okay, well, what is everything that's going to go into now the improved costs to do this deal? So let's just throw, give me some numbers. What do you think the house is worth at that fixed up, improved number? We'll run your real numbers.
It could be 230. It could be 270. So that was my gut feeling on it.
And so what's the difference between a 230 house and a 270 house? Is it quality? Is it size? Is it the date of closing? Like, is the 230 house 8 months ago and the 270 house today? Or, like, what's the difference between 270 and 230?
I don't have that data.
This house is a three-bedroom, two-bath with a full unfinished basement. We were having trouble finding comps with, you know, that amount, the same amount of square footage and with a basement. We could find similar but without a basement. So I would say probably a pretty good guesstimate, ARV of like 250.
Okay. Yeah, so based on Janie, what you said there, I would probably agree with that. So 230 is similar size, fixed up, but no basement. 270 is what, maybe a little bit bigger, maybe basement, maybe not, but just, you know, fixed up, but slightly bigger size. And so you kind of extrapolate in the middle, right? So you say, okay, these 230s are nice, quality and condition is good, but they're smaller with no basement. So 250 is a reasonable target number. So let's take your 250 as the number. Now, how big is the house? And do you have an estimate on what you think the cost of repairs will be?
Yeah.
He's gonna get the sheet. I can't remember what the square footage was just on the main level.
What was the main level?
Yeah, I don't remember what the square footage was.
Gotcha. So let me ask you this. 1970s brick ranch with a one-car attached garage?
Two car.
Two car attached.
Yeah, attached, but I think it was an open carport.
Yeah, it was a carport.
Carport.
And it was the vaulted ceiling 70s type with wood siding outside. That looks awful.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. And it's and you said it was a three bedroom, two bath.
Yeah, about 1,300 square feet.
Yeah, I was just gonna say. So we're gonna for grin's sake, I'm gonna say it's 1,400 square feet. But you just said 1,300 square feet. And the basement, is it a full basement or a half basement?
80%. It goes all the way garage.
Gotcha. So let's call it an 800 square foot basement. So we got a 1,300 square foot upstairs with an 800 square foot basement that is unfinished, and the plan would be to rehab the basement. Is that right?
No. Just update everything upstairs on the main level.
Yeah. My thought on it was the basement is big, doesn't leak. Actually, a concrete floor that has no cracks in it after this many years. Set it in bathroom downstairs that, you know, just you can see the pipes out of the floor. But the only problem is when they put the steel beams to hold the house up, they put them too close together. So if you were to build it into two rooms, the hallway to carry furniture down those would be very narrow. You know, and that was the only kind of clincher on me. I said, you know, if it was easy to build, you know, finish this basement because everything's going for it. Part of the basement can be repaired. It has a high enough ceiling. You can drop ceiling on it. But my idea on that was show them on the idea that they could redo the basement and let them do it and then let them understand the nightmare of it.
Yep. Is it is the place livable right now?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's just very outdated. I think everything's original, 1975, you know.
Yeah, gotcha. And let's see. Here's what I'm doing, guys. I'm just taking your numbers and I'm punching them in on the rehab estimator in FreedomSoft. And what city was it in again?
Athens, Georgia.
All right, Georgia. And Athens, gotcha. And create estimate. So fixing that size house up right around 30 grand. And I was going to say, based on what you were telling me, $25,000 to $30,000. And the rehab estimator that FreedomSoft just kicked out was $28,860. So let's call it a $30,000 rehab. So here's what we got. We got a 250 ARV house. We got a $30,000 rehab, which gives us a 220 as is value today. And excuse me, guys, I got something in my throat. If I just do quick and dirty math, because I kind of know how the math works, I'm guessing your offer is going to be somewhere in the 130 range, give or take. Where did you guys come up with a number? How did you guys come up with a number?
We looked at advice of the person, the rehabber and friend that's a realtor, and he said that, you know, he wouldn't pay any more than 150. The other thing, as we look at a total deal, the lady's in a nursing home. She's dependent on this money to fund her stay in the nursing home.
Yep.
And my gut feeling tells me that she would not, you know, the first thing a realtor comes in there to say, well, we need to straighten this place out. We got to update this. And, you know, wanting her to pull money out of her pocket. And I don't think the lady will have that. And so, you know, I've got to show where the realtor would not do her a favor by putting under contract, demand her to do things. And
that,
I guess.
Well, you're exactly right, Larry. You're exactly right. That's exactly, I bought a lot of deals from people in nursing homes, and that's the exact scenario.
Yeah. You know, it's
fire. Excuse me.
So 130, and then I just got to put down everything on paper. So when I go see the lady, show her what we do is better than get a realtor that'll end up selling it for $165 and costing her, you know, $20,000 closing and want her to put money into it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And here's how, let me tell you how I got to the 130s number, right? And it's in the 130s. I took the 250 minus 30,000 repairs, gives me 220, and I multiplied that by 65%. So I took 220 times 0.65 because I know, I've just done this long enough, I know that 65 cents on the dollar of the as-is value is going to give a rehabber, if I paid the 143 that math comes out to be, is going to be about a 20% return on my money. It's going to be about a 20% cash on cash return. Okay? Mm-hmm. So if I'm the rehabber and I paid 143, that would be my maximum, and you take that 220 times 65% minus your wholesale fee. So the way I got into the 130s, I just subtracted another 10 grand off of the 143 and said that if you could buy it somewhere in the 130s, you have room for a $10,000 assignment fee or a $15,000 double close. That makes sense?
Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
And that's consistent. It's consistent with what your investor realtor buddy said. He said he wouldn't pay more than 150. He got to the exact same math that I got. My math says when I do the quick and dirty simple percentage, I said I wouldn't pay more than 143. But we know that my math is we're doing some pretty good guesstimation, like estimates, right? But that got me to the same number as your guy. He said not more than 150. I came in here at 143. So I know that mid 140s is where a rehabber is going to want to buy. And so if I subtract $10,000 or $15,000 off of that so that I have room and margin to do an assignment of contract and get my profit in the deal, that's a perfect scenario.
Yeah.
So does that math process help you guys?
I think you just said exactly as my mind's clicking on it. When he said 150, he was of the mindset if we bought it and we were going to rehab it up and sell it, not wholesale.
That's exactly right.
Okay, answer my question. That's good. I won't tell you the other one. It's a nightmare.
No, that's great. So hopefully that helped you guys walk through the math on that and know exactly where you got to be. And you're right. Now, Larry, the deal that you want to do is go show that lady why she has an easier transaction working with you and a transaction that can actually get done because a real estate agent is going to require her to come out of pocket and invest in the property to improve it.
Right.
So,
and
awesome.
My deal was, long story how I got a hold of the house, knowing about the house was, I said that, we bought it, she's not going to be stuck with all the realtor's commissions and everything. If we go
That's
in
right.
there, it's a closing on it. Now, if we, and the wholesale end of it, if we do like a double closing or we do an assignment, then we get our money out and then all the closing costs and all of that goes to wherever they need to be. The lady or the
So what you guys can do is you could make her an offer to buy the property from her for, let's say, $135,000. And then you turn around and you assign that contract for, let's just easy math, a $10,000 assignment fee to a local rehabber. He pays you 10 grand, and when you offer the contract for 135, you say, and we'll pay all the closing costs.
Okay.
So you make her an offer of 135, and you pay all the closing costs. Then when you sell the contract through an assignment for a $10,000 assignment fee, your new buyer is going to pay all of the closing costs. She's going to still net the same amount of money.
Okay, gotcha. We'll get a contract, give her $10, tie it up for 90 days.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't tie it up for 90 days. I would get a good sense on, like, here's the thing that you don't want to do. Especially when you're working with seniors, and especially seniors in a nursing home, you don't want to go tie their property up for 90 days and shop the contract and hope you can sell it. You want to know that you know there are rehabbers that are doing deals in this area, so if you tie it up for this price, it's going to be an easy sell, or you have the financial capability to bring in hard money or a private lender and close on it. I mean, if you can buy this house, if the numbers are 250, based on what you just told me, if you can buy it for 135, go get the money and close on it. Like, that's a good deal. It's a good deal, right? And so what you don't want to do is tie it up for 90 days, because that will come back to bite you if you ultimately ended up not closing on the house. So I would do a shorter period of time. I would probably do 30 to 45 days. And I would be thinking to myself, how am I just going to close? If I can't just sell the contract, how am I just going to close on this thing?
Yeah, that was my concern. The time frame. I like a lot of time. And, you know, you're dealing with ones in a nursing home. This lady is in her mid-70s. She has MS, so she's not a 85-year-old, you know, with other problems. She's in a nursing home because she can't take care of herself, but it's not like she's at the end of life. It's just she's unable to take care of herself. So maybe time's not as big a deal right now.
Yeah, I mean, you guys will do whatever is right for your business, for you, for the deal, and for the seller. I'm just telling you, number one, be transparent about your intentions. Number two, be transparent about your capacity to close. Like if you're making an offer for 135 and you're not exactly sure where that financing or funding is going to come from yet, then number one, don't go make a cash offer. Make an offer that is cash or financing, and make it contingent on financing.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. That's what I thought.
Be completely transparent with the seller, especially a senior in a nursing home.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to do that for everybody, but I can tell you what you don't want is Larry and Janine screw 70-year-old seller in nursing home out of house on the local 9 news. You don't want that.
Oh, I know. You know, it's like that would get you to work in the scenario looking for the financing. But, you know, with the numbers that way, we'll go back and readdress that and talk with our banker on that to give an alternate plan B if we have to close.
Yeah, and honestly, guys, I'm telling you, if the numbers are what you just told me the numbers are, you will have zero problem finding a buyer for that contract. You'll be able to sell that contract within days.
Yeah.
Honestly. It's a good deal.
To buy a job.
The rehab, it's a good deal.
So they buy it just to buy themselves a job.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah, so you go to your local RIA, you log into FreedomSoft, you find all the buyers that are working in the area, you run the list source lists like we show you how to do in the Success Team training modules, All of that stuff, and the buyer is going to be there within days once you put it under contract.
Okay. That's information. You're dangerous now.
Awesome, guys. Awesome. Well, who else has a question? Anybody else in the middle of a deal want to run anything by me? All right. Well, hey.
Time for a next one? This is Larry again. Time for a next one?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. We're looking at a house in the countryside. It's 1 acre. Janie, you tell him. I don't have my glasses on.
1 acre, 12 square feet, built in 1958. I tried to run comps, and I'm not real good at that. I was having a hard time. Because of it being out in the country, and there's anything from single-wide mobile homes out there to, you know, $300,000 homes, brand-new homes. But the house has been empty for a year and a half. The homeowner shot himself in the house, and it's his brother that's trying to sell it. He has taken down some walls. It used to be a 3-bedroom, 1 bath, and now it's a 1-bedroom, 1 bath.
Here's what I'm going to tell you. You guys are going to spend more time and more energy trying to work that deal than it's going to be worth. Go find a different house.
Okay.
Yeah, that was kind of a feeling because his brother that's doing it owns a huge grocery store, 300 head of cattle. They're not, you know. He doesn't need the money, but the only clinch there is their mother is in a nursing home, and when this house sells, it will go into her assets, and she has got rid of all her assets so she could, you know, get Medicaid in the nursing home, and so selling the house is going to be a problem with it. I was trying to work some kind. I couldn't figure out how to work the deal to benefit them and us both, you know. The brother
said he
flipped houses before, but he don't have time right now.
Yeah, the location, and I don't know all the details. I only know 30 seconds worth of details on this thing.
Right.
But you told me the most important details: rural, $300,000 houses to mobiles, 1 bedroom, and suicide in the house, vacant for 18 months. That's enough for me to say I can go get a better deal and work less and not have to deal with the headaches of it. Just go get a different deal.
Okay.
I used to be in flipping in 2001, 2002, and got out of it. Do you still have to have a letter if somebody commits suicide in a house?
It's state by state. It would definitely be something that you would likely. I don't know Georgia. I don't know what their requirements are, but it would definitely be something that you're probably required to disclose to the new buyer. And so I would think that you're going to struggle. I just think it sounds like more work than what it's worth. Go follow our lead generation system and turn on a bunch of leads, and you'll be working a better deal faster.
Okay.
Okay. That sounds good to me.
What if I could price on it? What if it went for $60,000, we could get it and tie it up, very uncomplicated, give us plenty of time to wholesale it. Would that be a good deal?
So what do you think it's worth fixed up?
Well, you got the inside and, you know, put it back the way it needs to be, at least a 2-bedroom, 2-bath. It's got a lot of other things. It's got an outside new shop building, $10,000. It's got a double, triple, I say, garage, but it's not a garage. It's opened up and it's
carport
got a
carport with a loft.
Detached carport with a loft.
Figure it out.
So a lot of other little things like that. But
yep,
I got to feel what you said. I know the aggravation. I've been struggling with what to ask. And the brother, you know, a realtor he was going to list it with, you know, didn't really want to list it at anything, but he said, if you want to get rid of it, I'll give you $50,000. And the brother said, nah, I don't think so. But
right, so
that's... But he's sitting on it and accepted our letter. We had sent him a letter a year ago. It was in probate, and
yep,
he responded a year later. So,
yep,
you know...
Yep, exactly.
Something's working in his head. So we'll think on that. Appreciate that, you know. We'll be working the other ones, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but I like to at least send an offer, even if it's ridiculous.
Yeah, here's how you work that deal, Larry. You simply ask yourself, when I'm done improving the property, how much is it going to be worth? What's it going to be worth fixed up? And if that means it's a two bedroom, two bath with a three car garage, or it's a two bedroom, one bath, or it's a three bedroom, two, what is it going to be when it's fixed up? And there's your anchor. There's the brick wall that you build everything else off of. What's it worth fixed up? And how much money is it going to cost me to get it there? From the condition it's in today, how much money am I going to have to spend to get it to that improved condition, no matter what that configuration of the house ends up being? This is where people kind of make their mistakes. Like, this is highest and best use strategy simplified. Never look at a house and say, what do we think it's worth today? Always ask the question, what will it be when I'm done? And so look at the, what will it be when I'm done, and set that as your value. Then say, well, how much is it going to cost me to get it to that condition? That's your repair cost. And then you run the math backwards, and now you've got your offer price. And so if it's $200,000 fixed up, but it's going to cost $100,000 to get it fixed up, and now you got an as-is value of $100, and you multiply that times 60 to 65 cents on the dollar, you probably got an offer to a rehabber between $60,000 and $65,000. Minus whatever your wholesale markup is, you're probably right down to that $50,000 offer.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly how I explained to the brother how we would get a number of what it would be,
yep,
worth, what it costs, worth our time for it, and we'll offer you that. So.
Yep. Exactly.
We'll sell them on the idea, you know. So, okay, that's good. That reinforces my mind. You know, sometimes we think one way, and it just helps to throw it out somebody else, see if we're on track with that one.
Yeah, no, I like that. I think you guys are totally on track. Hey, one of the things I didn't ask you, Larry and Janie, where are you guys? I know you said this might have been your first conference call.
Right.
How far are you guys into the steps so far? Where are you at in the lead generation process?
I'm still in module one. Step two is done.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
I'm not into any of them, so I've got to play catch up. Too many other projects.
Well, and I'll tell you what, guys, if you start playing catch up, you know, get through the module one, which is understanding the different, you know, markets and a market selection process. Step two or module two is the deal evaluation stuff, where you're going to get the questions to the things that we've just been talking about. You're going to get our process for doing that.
Okay.
And then into module three is going to be lead generation. And so, you know, instead of having one or two deals here and there to work, like these two, I'm not saying they're your only ones, but you plow through the stuff and you get into module three, and you're going to turn lead generation on like you've never turned lead generation on before.
Okay. Sounds good.
That's my homework. Got to get it done.
All right. All right, guys.
Yeah,
well, hey, anybody? Go ahead. Who is that?
Hussein.
Hey,
Hussein.
How you doing?
How are you? Good,
yeah,
thank you.
Great.
Good. Yeah, I'm also at the step three in the module two. Sorry, module one, step three, lead generation process. So I'm preparing that, trying to post it to get the VA.
Yep.
Yep. So after that, then I'll do the bird dog, all those things.
Awesome. Yeah, guys, the faster you guys can get into that process and get your 250 vacant house leads in a low price market, the faster you get into working deals.
I have one question on that. I'm working on the Philly market, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And
okay.
The starting house, it's $500 and $1,000 and $1,500. Shall I tell them to grab those, in the cheapest houses, for 100 cheapest houses?
Yes.
Or I should just skip that?
No, you start with it. You want to know the areas where the cheapest stuff is going on. So
okay.
Start with the actual cheapest stuff. Single family houses, cheapest stuff. That
Great.
Gives you a really good picture.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yep. Awesome.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Hussein. Anybody else as we wrap up, guys? All right. Well, hey, guys, I'm glad Mike was on a plane today, so I jumped in here, and I'm glad we connected and got a lot of your questions answered. Keep plugging through the modules, the homework, and the stuff, and it's Thursday, so we'll see you guys on next week, early next week's call. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Thanks, Rob.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You bet.
Thank you, Rob.